This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Neil show for your Tuesday. Good to be with you on an absolutely gorgeous September day. Wait a second. It's September 21st. By law, there you go. Thank you. Oh, yeah. We're going to play for this for a while, okay? You like Earth, Wind, and Fire, Patrick? Oh, yeah. Who can forget? 21st day of September, huh? This should be playing everywhere in this country today. Absolutely. Oh, yeah. How can you feel bad with this song? One of the best dance songs ever made, man. Wicked horn section. Oh, there are some days I do miss being a radio, a music jock, man. Not too many, but occasionally. All right, let's play the chorus one more time. You want to know the impact of Earth, Wind, and Fire? Listen to me for a quick second. My kids, the musical instruments they played were trumpet, sax, and trombone. Do not tell me. I was ready. And Patrick, you just played the video of that song, right?
It did, yes.
Okay, you see those outfits they're wearing there?
Mm-hmm.
I will have the, I don't know, it is kind of Puritan turkey farmer, you know, funk master extraordinaire that he's wearing in that one. I got that suit at home. I was just waiting for the kids to get there with the horn ability, and off we go. We'll do it. It'd probably be the worst tribute band of all time. Can you imagine? It's an Earth, Wind, and Fire tribute band, and they open up the curtain. It's me and my kids. Hello there, everybody. No. Oh, gosh. It is the 21st day of September there. Happy 21st. We should have that song everywhere in this country playing today. Brilliant piece of music. Just a brilliant piece of music. I hope you're having a good day. Patrick, are you having a good day? Have you been outside at all today?
We're having a beautiful day here on Classic Hits AM 950.
Okay, no, man. Dude, it's classic soul. Classic soul. Classic R&B. I'm Marshmallow Fluff, coming playing out next 4 hours worth of songs for you right here. Coming a little bit later on, some James Brown, but right now, the Chantels. Oh, why not? Gosh, I could, you know, maybe one day we do that. You know, just in maybe over the holidays. One day in the holidays, we just do music. One day, just you know, it's gonna be what Matt chooses. I'll program it. There's no way in the planet the station would let me do that. It'd be great to do it one time, you know, but I'm not going to do it. We got too many things to talk about. Dear Lord, I remember when at the beginning of this year, I said to myself, what am I going to do to fill up 2 hours worth of show? Ha! I could be doing 12 hours every day. And still not get to all the stories that we come across on a daily basis. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. But there's always time for Earth, Wind, and Fire, man. There's always time for Earth, Wind, and Fire. All right, so I want to start off with a story here, and it's going to be a little bit wonkish because of the I'm going to get a little bit into the redistricting here because there are times, and I have been very critical of conservatives on the way they do things, but they are always thinking ahead. And I honestly, and you can say to me anything you like, I think the changing of parties of Bach, the defections of Bach and Tomassoni away from being DFLers in the Senate, and now potentially, and I do want to say potentially, another DFLer siding with the GOP. I've actually come to grips with the idea that it's amazing how sometimes the DFL doesn't see the game that the Republicans are playing. Because I can tell you right now, the Republicans, as much as they put out, you know, drooling fools, and we can run through the gamut of drooling fools within the Republican Party, the people that are behind the drooling fools, that basically tell the drooling fools what to say, who have their hands far up their backsides and are moving their lips, they're not dumb. And they're, you know, they're basically trying to you know, while the Democrats are trying to play checkers, they're playing Vulcan chess. And they're kind of thinking about options down the road. Now, that being said, I want to get that out of the way right now. I want to get to a story. Blue Stem Prairie had this one. We remember when State Senator Tom Bach, independent from Cook, campaigned for the 2010 DFL gubernatorial endorsement. Now former Senate Majority Leader Paul Gazelka had told Forum Communications newspaper that Bach and second term State Representative Dave Liselgard, Liselegard, a DFLer from Aurora, are supporting Gazelka's bid for governor. Reporting to the Duluth News Tribune, Andre Erickson reports Gazelka touts his Iron Range roots in a race for governor. The former Minnesota State Majority Leader Gazelka is running for governor with support from at least two former current DFL legislators on the Iron Range. Gazelka, who graduated from the Virginia High School, said he has support from Tom Bach of Cook, who left the DFL caucus in November to form an independent caucus with Senator Dave Tomassoni of Chisholm. Gazelka says he also has the backing from Representative Dave Liselgard, a DFLer from Aurora. I don't know that they would support any other Republican, but they do support me because I'm from Virginia, Minnesota. Possibly helps. Because, like I said, I worked at MinTac for a bit, so I understand the area. We still have land up there. Now, my family's from up there from a long time before Gazelka's was, probably. And, you know, I've had jobs up there, too. And so, yeah, I don't know if that's the case. Bach and Liselgard did not respond to the News Tribune's request for confirmation and comment in time from print for the weekend. We look forward to hearing what the responses are. Liselgard won his second term of House in District 6B with 54.54% of the vote. His Republican opponent, Julia Bruya, was criticized by Blue Stem Prairie and others for comparison to COVID-19 responses of the Holocaust. I remember that. That was, that was pretty offensive that, she was the, kind of the candidate up there, but that's who they wanted. And I actually want to tell you the truth. I called up this guy this last year for Democrat of the Day back in 2000. And he actually got into a screaming match with me because he basically felt as if unless all Democrats basically go along with the sulfur mining on the up in above the boundary waters and the pipeline, that we don't know what the deal is. And I said, dude, why don't you just demand three new foundries open and then you'll put every taconite miner back to work immediately? And he stopped because he was just going through the motions of his feigned outrage at the Twin Cities liberals And he was just, you know, it's his standard little shtick that he was doing up there to basically seem like it was them versus us, and I'm a DFLer and I'm not like them. And he stopped his shtick and he said, oh, that's actually a really good idea. I said, yeah, it is, isn't it? And I was, you know, but that's kind of the thing is that that's, you know, and the fact that that's kind of his shtick up there, I got to admit, kind of left me with questions like, why are we endorsing him as a DFL candidate? But that's needless to say. I'll get to back to that in a second. The Liz Lagarde has been subject of off-air issue-related lip drops and radio ads by Action for Liberty, as he mentioned in February, Colin Masavu Tribune. He was routinely trashed by the group's website with such posts as Liz Lagarde once he calls you a whack job, accused people of intimidating legislators. Not that Action for Liberty or its funders are fond of Gazelka. Witness Paul Gazelka pushes dangerous fake news to power, you know, as well. So we're not certain that Liz Lagarde's alleged support for conservative Republican gubernatorial is evidence of being intimidated. The DFL filed a complaint about the organization in March, but the complaint was dismissed at the end of July. So here we have another guy. Now, okay, we are what? It's September. I think I established that already this show. It's September 21st, 2021. The election is not until 2022. If you've got a DFLer, and there's a lot of things about this which kind of raise my eyebrows, to say the least. I mean, there are multiple things. And I posted about this earlier today. First of all, I got to admit, I am somewhat stunned that the... What you've got here is Gazelka already trying to put forward, I'm the moderate candidate, I've got DFLers that support me. And I understand why he's doing that, because unless the GOP can figure out a way to get back some of the secondary and maybe even the primary suburbs back in the fold, they've got no chance at winning statewide races. So he's already playing the, hey, where did you get the idea I was an extremist? Just don't ask me about police reform. That's kind of his mentality. He's already trying to play up to the suburban seats. And this is part of his game plan. Look, DFLers support me. And that's kind of his thing. Now, I think that that's dumb, because I don't know if you're quite aware, but this is still the party of Trump. And I don't think, if faced with the decision between a moderate or a zealot in, like, the witch doctor, Jensen, which doctor is going to show up this week? Is it going to be the actual doctor? Is it the guy that thinks we need to go get some horse dewormer? Who knows? Which doctor is it? So the witch doctor or Gazelka, I've seen the voting base of the Republican Party. The voting base of the Republican Party is going to choose Jensen. Maybe eventually Gazelka would win this if they ever decide they have to clean this kind of toxic sewer mentality out of the party. But I just don't see them doing that because, frankly, they need that base. That base is way too important to them. So, I mean, there's a side, that side of this whole story is like, Gazelka still thinks he, you know, this is in the bag for him. I don't know. I don't think that it is. I think that he's grossly undervaluing how dangerous this primary is going to be for him and for Michelle Benson. But maybe there's already been a decision made. I talked about the powers that be behind the Republican people that have said, okay, whichever Benson or Gazelka comes out looking like the better chance, we'll throw every dollar we can in the kitchen sink behind them to basically try to knock out Jensen. Maybe that's what their plan is. But I want to get back to Liz Lagarde and what he's thinking here. Now, first of all, I want to address this to the DFL. What are you guys doing allowing a guy who says he's DFLer to spend basically a year and a half campaigning for a Republican to replace the current DFL governor? And I know you people over there at the DFL headquarters like to think, we're better than that. We're such a wide umbrella party that we're going to allow actual Republicans to be part of it. See, aren't we good? No, that's dumb. That's really dumb. That's wildly stupid. You know, you should, if this guy has already said, nope, I'm going to campaign, I'm going to endorse, I'm going to back up Gazelka, then he shouldn't be a Democrat. He shouldn't be part of the DFL. Shouldn't be. And that should be a no-brainer. I mean, isn't it pretty remarkable that very, very rarely do you ever see any Republican ever endorse a Democrat for a seat? Rarely. I mean, it's got to be one of those seats where the Democrat is going, the Republican would get destroyed unless they suck up to the Democrats. But you don't see that. It's always usually former Republican House Speaker or former Republican Senator or former Republican Governor. That's what you get, is you get the former Republicans. Then they have the freedom to make their choices. They have no choice when they're part of that party. They have to swim with the rest of the school. So the DFL sitting out there and thinking they're smarter than the average bear by saying, we're going to have someone who's undermining our own party in the party. God, that's just dumb. And you need to call Liz Lagarde. If you're going to throw Thompson out, and Thompson did definitely have some issues, but if you're going to throw Thompson out, you probably should throw Liz Lagarde out. If you call him up, if you do, I mean, because once again, the story, it's not been confirmed. The Blue Stem Prairie story was not necessarily confirmed. If you find out that he indeed is supporting Gazelka and plans to campaign and helps Gazelka for the next year and a half, well, then you say, thank you very much. Let's call a caucus meeting and the DFL can decide whether or not he is part of the House majority. And good luck, because I guarantee you he's not going to survive a primary up there if he tries to run as a Republican and he run as an independent. Well, I can tell you this, right? You're probably going to pull more votes away from the Republican than you would as a moderate than you would from the DFL side. So good luck. But there is a, and also I should mention this, as these Republicans are up, or these Democrats, oops, these Democrats, so-called former Democrats or current Democrat who's just pretending and cosplaying being a Democrat, if that's the case, these people that are up there that have championed this pipeline, I do kind of also wonder, it's just like, you do realize that you're going to still be there, and when that pipeline starts leaking like a sieve, that people are going to look at you, and because you're the one that championed, you said it was going to be great. What are you going to, you're going to get on your remorseful face? You're going to be, oh, gee, Willikers, it is a shame that they spilled all that oil into the Mississippi River. Gee, Willikers, golly gosh. Yeah, I can tell you what, your name is going to be basically the mud that they're putting through those pipes right now. When you guys basically all of a sudden have to start dealing with an angry constituents where that pipeline is polluting the crud out of northern Minnesota. But we'll save that for another day, because trust me, I'll hammer the crap out of you morons for backing that project all day long. But when I do return, I want to come on back and get into why this is actually idiot politicians getting played by the Minnesota GOP on the Iron Range. I'll get to that in a second. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950. The progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. So once again, it is amazing to me that when you look at these Democrats, the DFLers that have, you know, either Thomasoni and Bach who've jettisoned the party and they've moved over, and Bach is actually thinking about running as a Republican. Now, good luck with that in the primary process. But as well, now you have this Liz Lagarde, the House rep, who says he's going to basically, at least that's what Gazelka is saying. There hasn't been a confirmation whether or not this DFLer is going to campaign for a Republican governor candidate for the next year. And frankly, right now, I think that if that is the case, you get the answer to that question today, Ken Martin, if I can do your job for you. You get the answer to that question today, and he says, yes, I am. Then, well, you've got to make a decision on whether or not you find someone else that can run for that seat. because you know what? That's you want to be an independent, go be an independent. If you want to be a DFLer, you support the governor. That being said, these three, if Liz Lagarde is part of this, the two for sure and possibly Liz Lagarde, God, they're dumb. They're dumb. Because what they clearly are not seeing is that the Republicans are playing them to basically be able to sabotage their districts to save as many Republican districts as they can in redistricting. Let's back up a quick second. The redistricting is going to happen, and there is going to have to be, I mean, the city of Minneapolis alone is likely going to pick up at least one House seat. The city of Minneapolis alone is going to pick up one House seat. You're going to have to start in the cities because that's where the population has grown the most. And you're going to have to then grow out from there. And eventually you get to these other districts. If you look at the three districts that desperately need to get larger because they do not have the population base for the size that they are at right now, what the Minnesota 7 seat is 40,000 people behind where it needs to be. Minnesota 8 is like 36, and I thought Minnesota 1 was like 31 or something like that. Anyway, don't quote me on the exact numbers, but needless to say, those three are all behind where they need to be. The other five have far more people in them than they're supposed to have because, once again, the idea of the census, the reason why we do this redistricting, is you can't have one congressional district with 200,000 people in it and one congressional district with 2 million people in it. You have to have equality across the board. And so, basically, the Republicans are going to lose seats because these seats are just going to all move toward the metro because the vast majority of growth in the metro, I mean, especially if you look at 2, 3, 4, and 5, those congressional districts, they've all picked up a ton of seats and a ton of people. And so they're going to have to pick up seats. And once again, as they lose part of their districts because they're going to have to give away some of these thousands of voters to other districts, that turns in turn these other districts more blue, like 1, 7, and 8, become more blue. And it becomes a harder math problem for the Republicans. I can tell you right now, after this census, after this redistricting, I think it's going to be virtually impossible for the Republicans to win 2, 3, 4, and 5 ever again. Well, 4 and 5 are long off the table. But 2 and 3, especially 3, is going to be a real, real challenge for them to try to win that anymore. And 2 is going to be tough, too. Because once again, they've got to figure out a way to move those outstate districts and let them pick up territory without damaging the Republican territory it is. And so 1 and 8, excuse me, 7 and 8. 7 and 8 border each other. There's 2 or 3 counties right off the top of my head there that 8 could peel off into 7 and they would be fine. And 7 would be perfectly fine. And 7, I have zero doubt, is still be a Republican district for the most part. But then all of a sudden, 8 has got a bigger problem because now they have the original 36,000 they were short, but now another 40,000 they just had to peel off to give to the Minnesota 7 district. So they're going to have to pick up, you know, what, Northern Washington County as a part of maybe Ramsey County? They're going to have to pick up something in the metro area because they don't really have any other place to go. And I guarantee you that Emmer is not going to give up too much of his district in 6. There's no way he's going to give up too much of his district in 6. So what the Republicans need is they need some sacrificial lamb districts where they can split those districts up, harvest the parts to basically fill out the population quotas for relatively safe Republican districts and not really lose any potential seats. Okay? Am I the only one that sees this? So where do they look? Well, they're not going to pick them up in Rochester. They're not going to pick them up in Duluth. They're probably not going to pick them up in, you know, St. Cloud is a tough call. And like I said, Emmer is not going to change too much things in his own district. So you're going to look up in the Iron Range where there are some toss-up districts up there. And so the Republicans go in there probably a year or so ago and start, hey, Tomassoni, you're more like us. Why are you even working with the DFL? You know, you need to leave that party, you know, and come join us. You need to leave them behind and come join our side of the things. You need to do that. Come on, you can do that. Hey, Bach. Hey, Bach. You know, remember when Susan Kent, you know, dethroned you? That was a big thanks, wasn't it? Yeah, and all you had to do, I mean, it wasn't like you were undermining the DFL message constantly anyway. I mean, geez, I mean, for them to get upset about it, I know. Hey, so here's the deal. Why don't you become an independent? Hey, Liz Lagarde. Oh, you know what? We super secret swear we're not going to campaign really hard against you in your district as long as you endorse a Republican and try to undermine Governor Walz. If you do that, and like I said, that's a hypothetical, you know, what could have happened. I don't know. We got to hear from Liz Lagarde yet on whether or not he's actually going to support the Republican or not. But what they really do is this, is then they basically take these three districts. They get the Minnesota DFL to turn their back on these districts because, you know, if these districts are going to become Republican districts, what's the value in the DFL in Minneapolis-St. Paul to saving those districts? I mean, I know that's cold, Iron Range, but that's the reality of it. They're trying to preserve other districts in the state. So all of a sudden, you got a bunch of people up there that are, you know, pseudo-DFLers that are, you know, basically quick to jump to the other side. Well, fine. Then your districts are sacrificial lambs. The DFL's not going to back you up. You think the Republican Party, as much as they sweet-talk you, Bach and Tomasoni, and might have been sweet-talking Liz Lagarde, you think for 1 second if they have the choice to save one of their districts from becoming more Democrat or killing a toss-up district on the Iron Range, that they aren't going to sacrifice that district on the Iron Range in a heartbeat? Oh, my God. They will wipe you out. And you idiots didn't see this, did you? Nope. So basically, what they did is they got you guys to sacrifice your own districts. Because I can tell you right now, that the Iron Range, Tomasoni and Bach, there's not going to be two DFL or toss-up seats. There's not going to be two toss-up seats on that center on that range. They are going to peel off parts of at least Tomasoni's district into safe Republican seats to basically preserve them. They'll say, hey, see, we got rid of Tomasoni's seat. You can move Tomasoni's seat down to the metro area and give it to one of the metro areas where they need to give a new Senate seat. We got rid of it. Liz Lagarde, if you were dumb enough to go along with this, well, then you deserve it as well because they're going to start carving up your seat. And they'll look, hey, you know how Minneapolis needs a seat? Well, we got Liz Lagarde's seat up here. We're going to get rid of that one. You guys can take that one, put it in the cities. And like I said, you think the DFL is going to really? Okay, fine. Give us that one. You guys are dumb. And anyone that goes, any Iron Range DFLer that goes along with the Republicans and thinks these are your newfound friends, you're freaking idiots because you don't see the forest for the trees. They're going to basically gut your district to save their own asses, okay? And if you can't see that, well, then I can't help you. But, I mean, it is pretty astounding how quickly those clowns served up their own seats. And I can't wait for the moments like, hey, wait a minute. My district basically doesn't even exist anymore. Hey, DFLers, I know I turned my back on you guys, but I thought we were friends. Hey, Republicans, my latest buddies, what happened here? Why didn't you fight for our district? Hey, I failed my constituents at the most basic level. Oh, no. That's what's going to happen. You guys got to start thinking. And just because, and here's what I'm going to tell you exactly how the Republicans did this to these guys. They had people start showing up at these DFL events and start screaming at them about, ah! Like, you know, the usual nuanced argument you hear from a Republican today. Ah! Yeah, that sort of thing. And these guys were like, I'm scared. These people are angry. Yeah. They're bullies. Stand up to the bully, for God's sakes. Have some integrity, for God's sakes. Instead, what the Republicans came is like, well, I'll tell you what, I know one way we'll get those guys from stopping to scream at you. Well, if you just snuggle up to us, we'll tell those wolves to stay away. Okay. You know, it's a crime that yeah. Well, I guess maybe to a point we should thank the Republicans for pointing out the weakness within our own party up there. the fact that you have people out there that all you have to do is have some people start screaming at them, and they're, well, can you stop? I don't like the bully. And Gazelka goes in there and say, hey, I'll get those bullies to go away. And all you have to do is, you know, kind of be my chum. Hey, do you need to stay as a senator in the DFL? Hey, do you need to endorse someone for the governor's race? It's a small favor in return, but I'll keep those people away from you. And you guys don't even realize it. And the reality is it's not that they're looking for the endorsement or necessarily the independent vote. They're looking for sacrificial lamb districts to kill in redistricting. And you idiots just served up the old country buffet, didn't you? 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Like I said, Liz Lagarde, if the Ken Martin should make that call today. And if he is going to basically spend the next year and a half endorsing Gazelka for governor, say bon voyage, good luck, and get him out of the party, because that's not a Democrat. That's not a DFLer. And we can find someone up on the range that actually wants to be a DFLer that can run in that race. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. I'm kind of stunned, if you want to know the truth, that these guys can't see that that's exactly what they're doing. You know, and frankly, you know, and it's... You know, I can't tell you how many times I talked to last year during Democrats of the Day. I would try to set up interviews with people up in the outstate areas, and they're like, these people are yelling at me. Well, let them yell. You know, it's you know, if they threaten you, contact the authorities, contact the police. And trust me, I get threats too. They're morons. And they're desperately wanting me to validate them. I'm not going to do that. And so... You know, it happens. But if you stick with the DFL message, you will win your races up there. You will win your races in outstate Minnesota. If you come out there going, I'm really a Republican, you're going to lose. If you're out there saying, let me tell you why the rest of the DFL sucks, you're going to lose. You know, you're going to lose. You're not going to win those races. If you go into your town today and you sort of say, you say to these people, that are there, they're kind of up there and they're angry saying, you know what, I'm trying to get you broadband. I'm trying to get you better healthcare. For God's sakes, I mean, have we learned one thing in this pandemic is our rural healthcare system is grossly inadequate and we need to get it rebuilt again? I'm for broadband everywhere to help to create jobs everywhere. And you know what? I'm not going to just sit on by and act as if when we have more people who have died than we had died on some of those war memorials, that we go on out and we salute every Memorial Day and Veterans Day, 4th of July, and we have had more people die than are listed on those war memorials of COVID-19. I'm not going to just sit back and act like this is no big deal. And then you can kind of win your argument. Ta-da. It's called fighting. I mean, for goodness sakes, how about in the ag sector? Just, you know, is the point of the agricultural department here just basically to make sure wealthy farmers and the millionaire farmers basically get as much taxpayer dollars as possible while the rest of us are only groomed to basically be assets for the corporate farm? No, I don't think so. But that's farming today. You enter into contracts and you better deliver. Because you're basically, you know, different than a small farm having to deliver to a big contractor is no different than working on a factory line right now. And that is a crime. A lot of those farmers did not get into that for a living for a reason. 952-946-6205. You can go win with the DFL message out there. I think that this is what this does is, you know, when you see these guys run away so quick is that it exposes, well, that guy should not have been a candidate. If they're that weak, then... And then they're at scared. Well, then let them go. Tuesday's COVID-19 update from the Minnesota Department of Health includes 6,352 new cases, 18 newly reported deaths. I want to remind people, as I say, 6,352, that is a lot, but that is a Saturday through Monday tally. Okay, so that's a three-day tally. Still, that's 2,100 for each of those days. The state's death toll is 8,011. We've crossed 8,000. since the pandemic began. As of September 19th, the state reported that 3,379,128 people have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine. 3,202,712 people have completed the vaccine series. Through the 20th, the number of people with COVID-19 hospitalized in Minnesota was 791. That's up from 751 reported on Monday. Wow, that's a huge increase. Ugh, gosh, what, another 34 people? Of those hospitalized, 222 are now in intensive care, 569 in general hospital care. Well, that's getting to the point now where we're going to start seeing, you know, elective surgeries postponed again. The 6,352 positive results in Tuesday's update were from 96,363 completed tests, creating a test positivity rate of 6.59%. Minnesota's test positivity rate over the past 7 days is 7.58%. Once again, we are over 8,000 people from Minnesota have died of COVID-19 in World War One. And if you go, by the way, go out to rural Minnesota. In every one of those small towns, there's a monument to World War One. Only 1,700 people from Minnesota died in World War One. We've had 8,000 people die of COVID. The Civil War, well, we were a relatively new state when that started, but still 2,500 people from Minnesota died in the Civil War. 2,500. Less than a third of how many people have died of COVID in the United States, in Minnesota, in COVID in Minnesota alone. Now, the numbers for World War II and for the 1918 flu outbreak are higher, but that was because, once again, if you looked at World War II, there still wasn't a lot of population out in some of those western states. Minnesota had a much larger population. Minnesota lost 9,790 people to World War II. We lost 10,100 people to the 1918 flu outbreak. I will say, on a national level, the pandemic is the number one taker of life in the history of this country, outside of the Europeans and white settlers' massacre of the Native Americans. But when you look at that, I kept saying to myself, there's no way in the world. I remember when we were at 6,000, I said things were starting to wind down. I said, thank God, I just don't know what I could do if we got up to 8,000 or so. Now we're at 8,000. And as long as the stupids are out there insisting stupidity is somehow a virtue, I don't see how we don't get to 9,000, possibly 10,000 dead in the state of Minnesota alone. Wow. Two stories here of remorse. Thank goodness one of these people did survive. I will say that. And I want to make sure I repeat what I've said. I don't want you dead. I don't want you sick. And I don't want you bankrupt for the rest of your life. I don't. The reason I'm wanting to get vaccine is because I want you to be alive and healthy, okay? Not because there's some nefarious plot out there, because I want you alive and healthy. By the time Mark Corin leaves the hospital, he will have lost 40 pounds, spent nearly 2 months battling COVID-19, and he still has a long recovery ahead. The former Oak Grove mayor, chair of the Senate District 31 Republican Party and Trump supporter, had refused the COVID-19 vaccine, believing he did not need it. Corin said he took zinc, vitamin D, and vitamin C supplements to boost his immune system, declining an opportunity to get vaccinated at Walgreens in July when he was there to pick up some medications. You're talking to a guy who should be dead, Corin, 64, said to the Minnesota Reformer interview for this hospital room with his wife Deb present. He has first experienced shortness of breath and a cough on July 29th. Within days, his oxygen saturation level had dipped to 78%, far below the 95% or higher expected in a healthy individual. He was admitted to the hospital on August 7th. And mind you, once again, he was offered a vaccine in July and he did not take it. Wow. He was admitted to the hospital on July 7th, and about 10 days later, he was placed on a ventilator, worrying he might die when he was intubated. He spent 7 days on the ventilator and has so far spent 44 days at Mercy Hospital in Coon Rapids. I always believed it's just another virus, he said. I was wrong. I will be the first to admit it. If I had taken the vaccine, I believe I might not have. I believe I may have gotten sick, but I probably wouldn't be in the hospital. If I was in the hospital, I wouldn't be on a ventilator. I would agree with that. Across Minnesota and the country, ICUs and hospital beds are filling up with COVID-19 patients, the vast majority of whom are unvaccinated this week. The number of hospitalized COVID-19 patients reads 757. In recent days, COVID-19 has resumed its pace as a leading cause of death in America. Corin said his near brush with death has changed his mind about the COVID-19 vaccine. The pros far outweigh the cons. Sir, I'll disagree with you politically. I'm glad you're feeling better. I hope it is going to be a long recovery. I've got friends who have gone through this. It's going to be a long recovery. All my best. I just wish it hadn't taken this for you to realize that I wasn't trying to trick you when I was just saying, get vaccinated. I really wish it didn't take this for you to realize that I wasn't trying to pull a fast one on you. I do hope you get better. Unfortunately, this next story doesn't have the happy ending. Kristen Lowry, 40, from Escalon, California, unexpectedly passed away on September 15th, according to a GoFundMe page. That's the healthcare of today, isn't it? GoFundMe. Family members said on Facebook that she lost her battle against COVID-19 after frequently posting content protesting vaccines and labeling herself unmasked and unmuzzled and a free thinker. Lowry had made use of political borders for her profile photos, including one reading, unmasked, unmuzzled, unvaccinated, unafraid, together we win. How's that going for you? Another read, free thinker, question everything, research mandatory. A lot of people have been researching the vaccines, and unfortunately, you didn't listen. In the photo, she also wore a shirt proclaiming herself to be an ex-vaxxer. I never trusted them, never again. Yet another photo was lined with a border reading, Moms for Liberty. Lowry was mother of four school-age children. But earlier this month, her sister Cassie wrote on Facebook that Lowry was in the hospital fighting for her life against COVID and pneumonia. My sister has a long life left. We need you here, sissy. Your kids love and miss you so much. Please don't give up. Last week, two family members posted on Facebook that Lowry had indeed died of COVID, with her aunt mourning that her heart is breaking for her four kids. So many people here need her here, but God must have special plans for her in heaven. If you read the Gospel of Matthew, you're supposed to provide health care. There's free shots everywhere. She just didn't take it. That's on her. Don't try to ship this off to God. This was her own decision. She's dead because she chose not to save herself, basically. On a GoFundMe page that has raised over $11,000, someone also shared a new, which is devastating to everyone that knew her. Kristen was always a beautiful and amazing woman, but more than that, she was a phenomenal mother and always put her children first. Well, I can make this argument. She didn't put her children first if she didn't get vaccinated. She put her own political beliefs first, and then her kids now have to suffer for that, and that's the reality. Her passing leaves a big hole for many of our lives and will never be forgotten, but will be greatly missed. I truly do feel sorry for the family. I truly do feel sorry for the family. Because this is a really stupid way to prove that you were wrong, to die. But don't try to label this as something else. This was just her own ignorance and brazen stupidity that gotten her to a point that she didn't get vaccinated, and now she's sick, and now it's God took her. No. No. She basically owned herself, and the rest of everyone else has to suffer for it, and all my best to their family. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll wrap up hour one when we come back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Now, once again, I can disagree with a guy like Tomasoni all day long, but this story, this is actually kind of scary. This stuff out of Duluth, I did want to make sure I mentioned this one. State Senator David Tomasoni's wife has been charged with domestic assault after allegedly hitting him with a broom handle and threatening him with a knife in their Iron Range home over the weekend. Yikes! Charlotte Tomasoni, 69, was charged with misdemeanor domestic assault and booked into the St. Louis County Jail in Hibbing after the incident early Sunday morning. According to the police report, David Tomasoni called police about 6:30 p.m. after Charlotte repeatedly hit him in the chest with a broom handle in their Chisholm home and later yelled down that if David came upstairs, she would stab him. Police said she was slurring her words and appeared to be intoxicated, and she denied the assault. Tomasoni, 61, told police that due to his ALS diagnosis, he has lost a lot of his upper body strength and felt he wouldn't be able to defend himself. Tomasoni represents the 6th District, encompassing the Iron Range and parts of rural St. Louis and Itasca counties, and was first elected to the state senate in 2000. A former DFLer, Tomasoni split with the party in 2020 and became an independent. He disclosed an ALS diagnosis early this year, and he said he would continue working. I'm going to bluntly say that, you know, at this point, I think I'm concerned that the senator's wife, if released and moving back into the House, if she were to get drunk again, where I shouldn't say drunk, I mean, allegedly, I mean, once again, let me be fair. If she gets to the point where she's slurring her words and appeared to be intoxicated again, she clearly seems to be at a point where she's, yeah, I mean, if she's at the point where she's actually assaulting the senator, then I think it's a safe bet to say that it's probably not a good idea for either the senator to be home around her or her be allowed to come back into the home. I think that that's a safe bet, especially with his prognosis. He's exactly right. I mean, he probably would not be able to defend himself if she did attack him. And the fact that he's, what was the threatening him with a knife? I mean, I'm presuming there was indeed then a knife that they did find. If that's the case, I mean, that's not only did she was beating him with a broomstick, broom handle, but she yelled down that she would stab him if they recovered a knife. Well, then she actually had the knife out. And so, yeah, that's an ugly story. I think Tomasoni is as far as politics go, I wildly disagree with him. And I think, he definitely double-crossed the DFL. But at the same time, no one deserves to have this. Like I said, I would make sure we separate the two, that's for sure. Hour two is up next.
Portions of the following program may be pre-recorded.
AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Matt, Patrick, Brett Johnson, kind enough to step into studio here. Hi, Brett. How are you doing?
Hello, hello.
You doing well?
I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm doing okay. I'm fine.
You're fine, yeah. That's the Minnesota answer.
I'm fine. I'm doing well. You and I were talking beforehand. Yeah, the whole thing. If Liz Lagarde, because once again, this is Gazelka saying Liz Lagarde, the Democrat, is going to endorse his governor campaign. And we don't have a confirmation from Liz Lagarde, the Democrat up there in 6B. If Liz Lagarde is actually going to endorse him and basically turn his back on the DFL, then I think the DFL has to get rid of him. But what will be hilarious is that if his district gets, and that's my prediction, his district will get wiped out in redistricting. He's going to sit there and say, why didn't the Democrats save my district? Well, dude, man, you turned your back on us. Why didn't Gazelka, your new buddy, save you up there? Of course he's going to act like he's a victim up there.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if he backtracks from this. Well, I mean, not backtrack, since it's Gazelka that brought this up. I at least look at his Twitter feed. It doesn't seem like he's that much of a right winger or anything.
He's definitely a moderate.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's,
he was still praising DFLers on his Twitter feed, so we'll see.
Yeah, like I said, if I'm Ken Martin, I make that call today saying, are you going to spend the next year and a half endorsing a Republican for governor at the expense of our own Democratic governor? Well, then we're going to have a discussion on whether or not you're still part of the DFL.
Yeah, you can't do that. I mean, Republicans would throw out a Democrat endorsing.
Oh, trust me, the DFL will sit. Come on, we're better than that. Let them stick around and undermine us from inside. You're welcome. Jesus. God.
We'll attract one moderate voter from Lake Minnetonka, and it'll be worth it.
It's like, we sold out our entire platform and everything we stand for, but three of those Republicans said they'll think about voting for us.
Yeah, good point. They won't vote. Yeah. They'll think about voting for you. They won't actually. Yeah, yeah.
Nah, I'm not going to vote for them. Why? Seriously. Find your spines, you fools. Anyway, the 10,000 followers of TikTok under Key Reeves, a.k.a. Me and Myself 81, were treated to behind-the-scenes snippets of the life of a federal agent. The radio, the badge, the firearms, the uniform, the office, everything one would expect to see from a dedicated member of law enforcement. Except Reeves was nothing of the sort. According to federal charges revealed Monday, the user is actually a 52-year-old Minnesota man with a long history of impersonating federal agents and military service members, And TikTok user tipster helped bring the latest alleged scheme to light. Rael Devin Simmons of Dodge Center is accused of impersonating a U.S. Department of Homeland Security DHS agent. The U.S. Attorney's Office, District of Minnesota, announced the complaint was, says Simmons used a profile photo that showed him wearing law enforcement gear and made several posts displaying law enforcement equipment, badges, and firearms, and referring explicitly and implicitly to himself as a federal agent. Because the Lord knows that's how federal, that's all federal agents do, let everyone know they're a federal agent on TikTok.
This guy needs a new hobby. Why would you make your hobby impersonating law enforcement officers? I mean, that's generally not going to turn out well for you.
Well, I can tell you why. It's clearly the guy is not happy with something in his life. And so this is his, you know, he's trying to make it seem like he's something else.
But cosplay is something else. I mean, a law enforcement officer is going to get you in some trouble if you're cosplaying as that.
Employment records show Simmons never has been, nor is not currently, working for law enforcement. In fact, thanks for the clarification. In fact, he's actually employed at a manufacturing plant in Shakopee via the temp agency. And even on his job application, lied about previously having worked for the U.S. government. Apparently, a TikTok user met Simmons through an app in January 2021, and the two started a romantic relationship the following month. Welcome to dating in the modern age. The witness, who lives in Georgia, actually flew to Minnesota, would spend time with Simmons in the Twin Cities at hotels, which Simmons said were being paid for by the DHS, and he was working undercover in the area. Dear Lord. According to this witness, Simmons would openly flaunt his work as a federal agent, because once again, that's, if I'm undercover, that's the first thing I like to do is blab about it everywhere I possibly can.
That's what they teach you, I'm sure, when you
blabby, 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 blab, yes. He told the witness he had been recently undercover in Miami. He sent the person... You know, none of these guys ever said, I was undercover in Topeka. You know, it's never kind of a believable story. It's, no, I was undercover in Mazatlan on a ship like James Bond. That's it, exactly like James Bond.
I hope he pronounces his name like James Bond, too, where he does the last name, then first name, last name.
In August, a TikTok comment caught the witness's eye, the witness being the girlfriend. The user claimed Simmons was impersonating a police officer again. Simmons made this account private at that point. Oh, you might want to do that before. I mean, just, you know, standard federal agent stuff, privacy on your accounts, you know, just FYI. Anyway, the girlfriend tracked down the TikTok user who made the comment and found out the deal there. These allegations represent the latest in a long string of such incidents for Simmons, who faced criminal charges in Colorado for presenting himself as law enforcement. Wow, dude, you're just going to get in trouble all over the place. Now, I'm surprised this guy was able to get away with it for as long as he does.
Yeah, okay.
Because I, about 10, 15 years ago, I posted a picture of myself in my military uniform and back from my Army days. And immediately, now, for the record, I was in the Army. I was a 31 Charlie, 3rd of the 5th Field Artillery, attached to Armed Forces Radio Network in Nuremberg, Germany. Lived in O'Brien Barracks. It was a grand time. The Bratwurst and Schwabach, magnificent, magnificent. That all being said, I was in the military. But I will post a picture like this or even say it on the air. And you've probably been here when some of the conservatives come in. It's like, you never served. And I post a picture up there. And the first thing I get is people's like, I don't ever recognize that insignia. Your nameplate doesn't look right. You clearly, no one ever had BDUs that were ever issued like this. And they'd be like, oh, dude, man, no, I was in the military. I had one guy claim, I've read every field manual the military had in Europe, and I don't remember that. I said, wait a second. You read every field manual.
That's a bedtime reading.
That is like the Library of Congress worth of books, because every unit has their own manuals. And you're saying you read every single one of them in the entire European theater. That guy disappeared after that comment. But there are people out there that they'll see a person in a uniform, whether the police or like this, and the first thing they do is try to find, oh, you're clearly faking it. Now, in my case, I wasn't. I was, scary as that might be, I was at one point the first line of defense for this country. You're welcome. That being said, this guy, I'm surprised he was able to get this long, because, I mean, The first thing I was like, dude, you're a federal agent and you're posting on TikTok. Okay. It doesn't seem like that would be legit to me. But, you know, no one came to him.
I wonder if he's putting money into this or if he's just, like, running to Spirit Halloween and picking up a bunch of badges.
Well, he's got shirts and badges, hotel rooms, and, you know. Okay. Mr. Simmons, if I may, you clearly seem to be somewhat upset with some of your life choices. And you seem to have a desire to be law enforcement. Well, I guess you can't really do that. You have the chance to change your life, sir. You could have gone to, trust me, have you seen the standards for law enforcement? I think some of these departments would pick you. Wisconsin will hire you in a heartbeat. I mean, my gosh, you can be drooling all over the application. They'll give you a badge over there. Sorry, Wisconsin.
Angry emails from Wisconsin.
Are there any other kind? I don't think so. But, you know, you could have changed your life. Instead, how much money did you spend? And don't tell me, I didn't have money to go to college. You had money for T-shirts and pistols and, I mean, and all this stuff. And hotel rooms that the DHS is paying for. And that Miami trip. I mean, that sounds just magnificent, doesn't it? Yeah, gosh. Miami, you say, undercover in Miami, because, you know, the federal officers probably have agents in Miami. They don't have to take someone from Minneapolis to, never mind. It's a little flaw in your old story, but I'll let you spend the next few months in jail to figure out where the loopholes were, okay? When you're spending that much time on your story, that your lie that you're living, then maybe you should just look in the mirror and say, okay, maybe I should just stop this and change my life for the better.
Yeah, or just go ahead and do it at that point. But instead, it's easier just to invest money in little cosplay and fake guns and badges and all that.
By the way, did you hear Patrick's now a commander of a yacht? Oh, well, tell us more about this yacht captain stuff there,
Skipper.
Patrick. Sorry, I just threw Patrick under the bus. I apologize, Patrick. Yeah, sounds like a fantastic yacht, though. I have to get out there sometime, okay, when it's parked here in Minnesota. Okay.
All right. Well, we'll see you out there then.
Ahoy, matey.
You ever bring that down to Miami, too?
Was you in Miami? Were you a federal agent? Were there federal agents on it? No. We're giving Patrick. Patrick never. He's a very honest individual. He'd never be like that. I took the easy joke. I'm sorry. You have Patrick Cooligan coming in, right?
Unlike an honest individual, that's me.
Unlike my lying pool of disdain and disgust. Brett Johnson's here.
Indeed, yes. Today we got Patrick Cooligan from The Reformer, as we're going to be talking about his column today that is saying that police unions largely shouldn't be allowed to unionize, which he makes a good argument about that, making clear, not saying we're going to abolish private unions or other public sector unions, but police unions, not a good idea.
All right. Cavalcade of lies himself, Brett Johnson.
That's right.
Sorry. Johnny Dishonest. Here he is with Mr. Honesty, Patrick Cooligan, over at the Minnesota Reformer right here on AM 950.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, Brett Johnson here on a Tuesday afternoon. And as usual on Tuesdays, we're joined by Patrick Cooligan, editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer, website minnesotareformer.com for the latest in Minnesota politics. As today, we're going to be talking about a local Republican operative who at one point was anti-vaccine and now is encouraging people to get vaccinated. And we're also going to mainly be focusing on a column Patrick wrote in today's Reformer talking about why police unions should be illegal. Patrick, thanks for joining me on the show today.
Always good to be here.
Yeah, let's start off on your column talking about why police unions should be illegal, as you're saying that reform isn't needed in this case. We need to entirely abolish the idea of police unions, and you put through, I think, a really striking analogy talking about how, well, imagine if the military had unions, and I could definitely go about down a rabbit hole thinking, well, wait a second, let's say we have a terrorist attack and the military needs to respond, but they're saying, we don't really want to right now because we're unionized. It's a really striking analogy that I don't think a lot of people necessarily think about when comparing police unions to the military, for instance, where when you give an organization force like that, it can be awfully dangerous to give them the power to unionize.
Exactly. we have powerful armed agents of the state, and what we don't want is for them to be able to form a kind of independent power center, which is what we want unions to do in other cases when they're because we want them to be able to defend the rights of workers. But in this case, when you're talking about armed agents of the state, it's dangerous. They would, of course, there'd be a great threat that they would interrupt the chain of command be kind of a malevolent force in national politics if we had a unionized military. So, of course, we don't do that. And yet we do allow police unions. And I think it's a strange contradiction. And I kind of laid out a two-part argument. First is that unions, the police unions, because they are powerful, really with both parties, but especially now with the Republicans, that's kind of switched over the years. They can put up legislative roadblocks using their power at the legislature to block reform, and they've definitely been huge players in the last 15, 16 months in that debate. And Republicans at the legislature have said essentially any kind of police reform is going to have to get the okay of police groups, meaning really the unions. So that's one problem. And I would add that unions also, by definition, they are required to protect their own members, and including when their own members are disciplined. And so repeatedly we've seen instances where really significant misconduct on the part of officers has been defended by police unions, grieved, and then eventually a little less than half the time, arbitrators have overturned sanctions, discipline against officers. That all is, I think, problematic. And then the second issue is sort of more global, and that is this, as we seem to edge closer as a country toward authoritarianism, mm-hmm. I'm just very bothered by this increasingly right-wing power center in the form of police unions who are also armed and have the power to investigate and interrogate and so forth. I think it's dangerous at this moment in American history.
There's another distinction that I think you make as well, where the relationship the police have is much different than when you have a traditional employer-employee in a private business, where the police obviously have a lot of power, being that, well, they can, in essence, be judge, jury, and executioner. So I think that power dynamic is important to bring up when you're comparing other unions with police unions, where typically, yeah, your average private or even public union doesn't have the same sort of power that the police have. So I think that's important to point out, too, when you're talking about why we should look at abolishing police unions, is that they already are very powerful, and giving them even more power, maybe not such a good idea.
Yeah, one of the counter arguments that people will throw out, I didn't get other public sector unions really to respond other than AFSCME, which is a major public sector union, that they say, well, you know, if you eliminate police unions, they're going to come for the teachers next. It's kind of a slippery slope argument. I don't find it to be very compelling. And just as you said, teachers, generally speaking, are not carrying guns and handcuffs. And so there's less to worry about in that regard. These are just in the prosecution of their duties, they have a lot of power. I don't think we should be giving them an opportunity to collectively gather even more power.
How do Minneapolis city leaders feel about this idea of removing officer rights to unionize? I know you had a chance to speak to, I think, at least Jacob Frey's office and possibly some other Minneapolis politicians. How are they feeling about this idea of possibly removing that right to unionize for police officers in the city?
Frey's very open about changing the arbitration process, reducing the arbitration rights of officers so that it's easier to terminate them. When I broached this issue of, well, why don't we just get rid of the union altogether, he said he was open to it. The problem is that it's in Democratic politics, the idea that you would ever advocate for the elimination of collective bargaining rights is like, it's the third rail. It's like saying you're against Social Security or something. And I understand why labor unions have had a very difficult half century, and I'm a proponent of labor unions. I think the country would be better off if a lot more workers were unionized. But I think in this case, we can see the dangers of it.
And talking about the political realities, you were hinting at this too, that even at the state legislative level, probably unlikely that either party would want to take much action on this, being that at least police unions have such a weird relationship with the political parties. It's the complete inverse of what other unions have in terms of their relationships with political parties, where, of course, Democrats are they almost always are in favor of protecting union rights and expanding unions, while Republicans are more in favor of right to work and giving unions less power. But when you bring the police union in, the relationship is completely changed, where Republicans want to protect police unions and Democrats maybe aren't necessarily all going to be on board for possibly getting rid of police unions, but they certainly would, I think, at least with your conversation with Mayor Jacob Fry, a little bit more open to it than Republicans. So that whole dynamic with the political parties is very interesting when we talk about police unions.
Right. Especially in recent years, the Republican Party is hugging the police union tightly, as law and order has become kind of their signature issue for them. And it has coincided with an increase in violent crime. So that's a very useful political arrangement for them. And on the Democratic side, the other public sector unions, they don't want this kind of thing on the agenda, because they feel like if we start talking about getting rid of the police union, that just opens it up for Republicans to start talking about getting rid of other public sector unions, which of course is their ultimate goal. For many Republicans, we saw it happen in Wisconsin. So I'm not going to say it's not a true danger. I don't think it's a danger here. And I think that the benefits of this kind of debate far outweigh that slippery slope argument we talked about.
And you can read that column over at MinnesotaReformer.com titled Police Unions Should Be Illegal. Again, find that over at MinnesotaReformer.com. One other piece I want to talk about that was in the Reformer today is from Ricardo Lopez, who's writing about a Republican activist in Minnesota named Mark Corin. He is the former Oak Grove mayor, chair of Senate District 31, and has been a self-described Trump supporter. And he was someone who, prior to getting COVID, was very anti-vaccine. Now, unfortunately, over the past few weeks, he did come down with COVID and ended up in the hospital and on a ventilator. And he has, to a degree, changed his views, where he is urging people now to get vaccinated. And again, this just seems like stories we're seeing over and over again, whether it's politicians or conservative radio hosts that are peddling anti-vax propaganda, and then all of a sudden they get COVID and they're saying, well, probably would be a good idea to get vaccinated. So another case, this time of a local politician going down kind of the same road, encouraging people to get vaccinated. And he did bring up some interesting insights in terms of why he thinks people are not getting vaccinated, especially conservatives.
Yeah, I think, as you said, it's like the song is on repeat, or it's like a cover song, just different people with the same story, and that is vax hesitant folks getting the disease, and then warning like-minded people, please get vaccinated. And as you said, we asked him why why was he hesitant? And what he described was really a breakdown in information. He said that people like him, they just don't trust. They don't know who to trust. They don't trust institutions, and especially the government. And so to have Anthony Fauci out there saying this is what you should do, they immediately are distrustful. This is my own kind of editorializing. I think we can definitely point to specific actors that have played a role in really diminishing the authority of good information. And I'm talking about Fox News and talk radio and so forth. And now this is where we are, where people, they don't believe the FDA when it says that a vaccine is safe and effective.
Now, it should be clear from the piece that he's not advocating for vaccine mandates. He is just encouraging people to get vaccinated. And it was interesting to read about how even when he posted about this on his social media, a lot of negative reactions from commenters on those posts, even though he wasn't advocating for vaccine mandates, even encouraging people to get vaccinated, still brought a lot of fury towards this Republican activist, which I think still means that Republicans and conservatives still have a lot way to go in terms of embracing vaccinations fully.
Right. I mean, the numbers are improving, and this is somewhat of a mystery in the Republican Party right now. There's a lot of them, including candidate for governor Scott Jensen, they seem to be tailoring their message to people who are not vaccinated, but that's only less than a quarter of Minnesota adults. So I think they're painting themselves into a bit of a corner here. But as you said, Mr. Corin faced a lot of angry reactions. I guess people feel betrayed when he says you should get vaccinated. It's that's kind of the world we live in. People are they're enraged, and they soak up a lot of disinformation, and then they put it out into the world.
Yeah, unfortunately, that is the case. We've been speaking with Patrick Houlihan, editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer. Make sure you check out his column about why police unions should be illegal over at minnesotareformer.com. You can also read about a lot of the other great reporting that the Reformer does, including this local Republican activist who is now encouraging people to get vaccinated, again, over at minnesotareformer.com. Patrick, as always, thanks for the time today. All right, we'll take a break and send things back to Matt McNeil on AM 950.
Oh, yes. Heading to Miami. Indeed. All right. If you're wondering if that online personality that you're thinking about dating is telling you the truth, okay, so some hints. If they say they're a federal agent, I don't know too many people that say that. They'll say they work for the government, and then they'll kind of keep a lot of that stuff private. But if your big clue that they're probably not telling you the truth is, I was down in Miami doing undercover work. Really? Because you don't seem to be too undercover on TikTok when you admit that. If it, it just is one of those things where, I think, we all like to believe the myth, but the reality is that if you just put some thought to it, I mean, of course, this guy's story kind of implodes just under its own weight. And like I said, I mean, I know some people that work for the government and various government agencies. It's always when it's someone who's not telling the truth, it's always, I was in Miami. I was in Los Angeles. It's not, I was in Billings, Montana. I was in Bismarck. Really? Yeah, we had to break up a meth ring in Bismarck. If they're telling you that story, I mean, that's either that guy's really good at lying, or I feel sorry for that guy. It might be a cry for help to get out of the job at that point. 952. By the way, on sports news, this is just breaking. Kirill Kaprizov, apparently 5 years, $45 million with a while.
The done for real on the dotted line?
Apparently so. This is Russo reporting this one in The Athletic. So it's, yeah, we're a much better team with him. I mean, I'm not the biggest hockey mind of all time. I love hockey. I love watching hockey. But it's, yeah, it's, I can tell when he's really good. 5 years only, though.
Yeah, I just got that alert, too. So we can stop holding our breaths now. And it was, not to go off on a tangent, but it's like, okay, so you have two of the most electrifying young stars in your respective sports in Kaprizov and Byron Buxton, and neither one could get signed, but at least now one of them is.
Well, and, you know, Mr. Glass Buxton, I'm not exactly sure if we should sign him. I mean, he just keeps injuring himself. I don't know. And I know you get the fear of, he'll go someplace else and he does great. But all right, we're done with that. Let's actually talk about different kinds of numbers. Star Tribune's polling numbers, they've been releasing poll numbers the last few days here, and they released some poll numbers today, which are very interesting. And, I'm a little questioned about the methodology on one area here, but maybe not. I think maybe the question kind of answers why there might be a difference between what national polls are saying and what the Star Tribune poll is saying. And I want to get into this by saying, once again, if you are a Republican and you're looking at your front runner is the witch doctor, Dr. Jensen, which doctor is it going to be? A legitimate doctor or the kook? We don't know. It's witch doctor. Anyway, witch doctor, Dr. Jensen, if he is your, you know, he's Mr. Anti-Vaxxer. He wants to write a law that outlaws masks in schools. Just roll that one around in your noggin for a little bit. He wants to write laws that prevent, even if you are a parent, even if you are have a child who has a health condition underneath it, he wants to make it illegal for anyone to be able to wear a mask in a school. My God. At least that's kind of how I took his initiative when he called for civil disobedience. Which he now says was, well, I mean, that's just, I was just saying we have to have a disagreement of words. Yeah, okay. Now that you're getting called out on that. Anywho, if you're the Republican Party and that guy is running, is leading right now, and he is leading as far as a candidate for governor, good luck when you look at these upcoming numbers here. Thinking about restrictions that were put into place in your area to prevent the coronavirus from spreading. Do you think these restrictions have gone too far, didn't go far enough, and we're just about right? And once again, the mentality of the Republicans is to believe that everyone's outraged. Everybody's outraged. That's Republicans. That's what they want to believe. 43% say it's about right. 26% on top of that say they've not gone far enough. So I want to make sure we understand what the question here was being asked is that thinking about restrictions that are put in place in your area to prevent coronavirus from spreading, do you think these restrictions have gone far enough, didn't go far enough, or were about right? Well, 69% of respondents said they either were about right or did not go far enough. Only 30% said they were too far. Now, Republicans. I'm no math whiz, but if I see 69 versus 30 and I'm saying to myself, is this a good platform to run on if I'm going to try to become a governor or a senator or any of the statewide races? Do you think I should go with the point of view that only 30% of the state agrees with me on? I don't think that's a good idea. I don't think you're going to win too many hearts and minds with that one. I'm just going to say that. Have you personally received at least one dose of coronavirus vaccine or not? 80% have said yes, which only 18% have said no, and 2% refused to answer. That's the discrepancy there. But I'm kind of getting the impression when I look at the numbers that are put out by the Minnesota Department of Health, I'm wondering if some people are not reporting that they've gotten vaccinated. Trying to keep it secret. I don't know. How confident are you the coronavirus vaccines will protect you against new variants of the virus? Are you confident, somewhat confident, not too confident at all, or not at all confident? Very confident and somewhat confident. Very confident is 31%. Somewhat confident is 41%. That would be 72% there feel the vaccines are going to protect them. And we just heard, I mean, back in the Minnesota coronavirus update I did last hour, we heard from the one guy who was a Republican who said that, yeah, if I'd been vaccinated, I probably wouldn't have even gone to the hospital, but if I had gone to the hospital, I probably wouldn't have been put on a ventilator. And yet this is, I'm of the mindset the vaccines actually do a substantial job at basically keeping you healthier than if you're unvaccinated. But looking at the other side of that coin, not too confident, not at all confident, that's only 26%. So you on one side have an issue that is got 72% popularity, the other side of it, 26. What do you think if you're a Republican? Are you going to really run on the anti-vaxxing? I can't wait for the Republicans, frankly. I can't wait for Republicans when they get to the general election to go on out there and start making the argument saying, well, I was vaccinated way back when they first started offering vaccines. And sure, I never shared it before, but ignore that part. And of course, I railed against vaccines, but ignore that part. But would I be against vaccines if I actually got one? I mean, that's going to be their argument. Here's where it gets a little bit interesting. Do you support or oppose requiring people in your community to be vaccinated in order to attend crowded events such as concerts, sporting events, or movies? Once again, more people support this, 49% rather than oppose, 45%, undecided, 6%. But it is definitely got a majority of people support having these things. And I'll come back to some of the national numbers here in a second. And it shouldn't be too much of a surprise, the vast majority of people that do support having these, requirements are from the metro area, outstate where the Republicans are brainwashing their supporters into, hey, maybe dying because of COVID is a better way than admitting the Democrats are right. That sort of thing. Do you support or oppose requiring people in your community to be vaccinated in order to go into a bar or restaurant? Now, it should be noted that Biden's proposal is for businesses of 100 or more and busy locations. And okay, here's the problem I have with the Star Tribune polling. If their last question was talking about if you were at a crowded venue, it was a crowded event, okay? And then they predicated it by saying concert, sporting events, or movies. If it was a crowded event, would you be against it? And so, I think on one side of it, it's that would mean to me a crowded restaurant too. But then when you get the crowded restaurant question, oppose actually starts winning out. 50% oppose it, 44% support it. Still undecided, 6%. The next question as well went to the opposed side. Do you support or oppose requiring people in your community to be vaccinated in order to return to their workplaces? 49% oppose it, 43% support it. My guess is going to be if someone came to me and said, we want you to go back to the office, would you rather everyone in the office was vaccinated or not vaccinated? And if I'd been vaccinated, I'd be like, I would want people to be vaccinated. So I don't quite understand how they got this number. This kind of, it definitely seems like that number is really an outlier. Because 49% opposing people, I think most people would say that if they had the chance and the opportunity, they would rather have their coworkers vaccinated. I'm actually kind of flabbergasted by that because that's like sort of saying that would you rather your car had or did not have seatbelts? And I think most people today would say I'd rather have seatbelts in it, and as opposed to kind of going to the work and just hoping your coworkers are there. Now, as I bring up that, I'll tell you what, let me finish out the rest of the poll numbers here that they put out. Do you support or oppose requiring teachers and students in K-12 schools to wear a face mask? 59% support face masks in schools, 35% oppose, 6% undecided. Once again, Republicans, I'm no math whiz, but if you got 59% of people saying they're for mask mandates in schools, I got news for you. That's not going to come back. That's going to be a painful loss for you if you think that that's going to be your winning strategy. Now, it should be noted that, and I'm going to just quote the polls that came out in The Economist, Forbes, and The Hill, three conservative media outlets, they basically show support for Biden's vaccination program at 60%. These are the conservative media outlets, Forbes, The Hill, and The Economist. Their polls show people are for being vaccinated. So the polls that they had here in this one with the case of bars or restaurants or going back to work, those definitely seem to go counter against what these other national polls are saying. Now, is Minnesota different? Maybe. And maybe this is a little bit of an outlier that's a legit poll, but I still have a question about the coworker thing, because most people I know have said, I don't want to go back in the office unless it's safe. So I don't quite understand how the question was asked or what the situation was, but I'm kind of surprised by that. I have zero doubt Republicans have looked at this, and they're going to suggest to their politicians, stop talking about face masks in schools, or endorse them because most people want them. Stop talking about vaccines because most people want vaccines. So, you know, before you get yourself into a situation where you are having to kind of, you know, defend why you're against something that, you know, 80% of the state has already gotten. I don't know, you know, if that's really necessarily a solid starting point for a campaign. But I'm pretty sure what Republicans are going to come back to do is somewhat, you know, come back and make an argument that the real problem here is demanding, we're just for opening things up. There shouldn't be a vaccine mandate. And that's going to come off these numbers. I mean, I that's going to be my guess, is where the Republicans are going to go with these numbers. But the reality is, I'm going to go back to the first question that was asked. Thinking about restrictions that were put in place in your area to prevent the coronavirus from spreading, do you think those restrictions have gone too far, didn't go far enough, or were just about right? Well, 69% of people feel as if the rules and the laws that were put into place were good. And that includes rules put in by Joe Biden and by Governor Walz. I don't think that you can really argue that the fact that most of these rules and regulations have come from Democrats, and the vast majority of the people are serving feel as if this has gone pretty well. We'll have to see. I still think, once again, if you got Jensen as the top of your ticket and you look at these numbers, if Jensen actually does become your gubernatorial candidate, you're not going to be able to put enough roses on that pick. You're just not going to be able to do that. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. One more break. Come on back. Final story. And then, of course, we've got Native Roots Radio coming up here in the 6 o'clock hour. Make sure you stick around for that. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. From KSTP, Bethel University, the authorizer of charter school Hmong College Prep Academy, is requesting the superintendent's removal following a review of millions in questionable investments. HCPA is a K-12 charter school in St. Paul with a curriculum geared towards preparing students for post-secondary education. According to the Minnesota Association of Charter Schools, its enrollment is over 2,000. In a letter obtained by 5 Eyewitness News, the university outlined the areas in which it holds HCPA accountable, including its academic and educational program, its fiscal management, its governance and leadership, and its operations and legal compliance. All right. Federal court filings state that during an initial effort in May of 2019, HCPA Superintendent Christina Hang reached out to a woman named Kay Yang and to see if she knew of any potential investment opportunities for HCPA fundraising efforts. While Hang requested to allow HCPA to invest in Yang's hedge fund, Sapphire Fund, which is like Sapphire only with an X instead of an S, Sapphire Fund LLC, that request was denied. Federal court filing state Yang then introduced Hang to a hedge fund, Woodstock Capital LLC. The same year, a federal lawsuit claims HCPA wired $5 million from its Minnesota-based account to Woodstock Capital, which reportedly concerned the charter school's legal counsel as not being within the parameters of HCPA investment policy. In an email included with federal court filings, the attorneys representing the charter school noted that the superintendent his reservations about HCPA's intent to invest with Woodstock Capital prior to the wire transfer. The attorney representing the charter school noted in a legal opinion to the superintendent the investments involve the risk of loss of capital and that interests are suitable only for sophisticated investors who do not require immediate liquidity for their investments, the attorney advised, reviewing the decision with an independent advisor. Now, I'm going to make a quick interjection here. I have, for many years, managed my own investments. And I can tell you one thing. I've been somewhat successful. I'm actually kind of shocked at how successful I've been at times. But I've done pretty good. And I've done pretty good because I did not do one thing. I did not treat my retirement portfolio or my investment fund as a Vegas trip. I didn't start going in there and try gambling here, gambling there. I made sensible decisions, kept myself out of really kind of turbulent situations, and it's actually worked. Ta-da! The people that end up having a lot of problems are the people that treat investing, regardless of your retirement or in a case like this, as a wild trip to Vegas, man. Let them ride. Woohoo! And it kind of sounds a little bit that that's what was going on here. The attorney representing Woodstock Capital also noted that being under the impression the charter school and its counsel had resolved any concerns with Woodstock investment strategy by individually consulting with an auditor. HCPA then claimed the school was noticing significant decreases in the value of HCPA's account, and Woodstock Capital noted multiple phone calls, text messages, and emails were exchanged after Dr. Hang became concerned about drawdowns in the account. In early September, filing noted a loss of approximately $4.3 million to date. Oh, that's a pretty bad investment. Jeez. They suck at managing money. Let's just be honest. Who in the world went with this crew? And that should have been pretty 4.3. I mean, how? That's like Brewster's Millions. Are you trying to lose the money at this point? Meanwhile, Bethel University also reported receiving inquiries from the Minnesota Department of Education regarding certain HCPA conflict of interest conduct. As a result, the university, in its role as authorizer, requested the HCPA board fire Hang. The university requested HCPA then fill in that position with a qualified candidate who has not had previous connections to the charter school. The university, I'm wondering, is there a connection between Woodstock Investing and Hang that's not been disclosed? I don't know. I'm kind of speculating wildly. The university is also requesting HCPA hire an outside board consultant to carry out the recommendations outlined in corrective action plan. On behalf of Hang, a spokesperson declined to interview a request from Channel 5. HCPA's board of directors issued the following statement to Channel 5 News. The Hmong College Prep Academy Board is in the process of reviewing and responding to Bethel University's report and recommendations. The board is in the process of retaining independent legal counsel to investigate and review specific personal recommendations. It is important that the board follow due process on employment-related issues. So at the very least, we know that the superintendent didn't consult with when the legal side brought up the very legitimate concerns about the $5 million that basically that didn't seem to get resolved. And so someone seems to have gone off on their own and clearly doesn't know that much about investing. If you give your money to a group that's lost $4.3 million of your $5 million investment, that would seem that my guess is you're paying for a lot of people to get a bonus or something like that. That's needless to say. If I may, I have been a big fan of the public school system. I am still a big fan of the public school system. And you know why I'm a big fan of the public school system? Is I've never had, there have been sometimes people stealing money for stuff like this. I have never heard of a school superintendent taking $5 million from a school fund and investing it wildly on investments which are more akin to a poker table in Vegas. That's one of the reasons I would rather have my kids in public school. Just saying. Native Roots Radio up next till tomorrow. See ya.